I think just that everybody listening to this to just, you know, take a breath and just celebrate how unique you are, you know, and how it's a miracle that statistically that any of us made it to be alive. The chances of all those things going right from all history and blah, 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 and to be able to like be alive is like a miracle in and of itself. And it's like, what do we get to do with it next?
It's no secret that the coronavirus is affecting all of us as individuals. But the effect it's having on business, especially small business, is unprecedented. If we're going to survive this, we need resources and we need each other. We can't do it alone. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business. With my background in economic and workforce development, disaster preparedness, and general business strategy, I know I can help you navigate this scary time in your business and beyond. It's all about resiliency. We'll have invited experts to help us navigate through the current noisy landscape of resources and programs that are being made available today and who will be able to prepare us for tomorrow. Let's do this together. I'm Jesse Torres, and this is Hack My Business. Hi, and welcome back to Hack My Business. This is Jesse Torres, creator and host of Hack My Business, reaching you once again in what's going to be the last month of the summer. The kids are going back to school, and I am here once again from my office in sunny Pasadena. Really excited to be joined today by a really good friend, Kurt Deredix, who's the general manager of Hunt Club, also a really well-known, regarded entrepreneur, the founder of several companies, and just a real amazing fixture in the LA venture capital kind of scene and startup scene, but just somebody who I always go to as a touch point for everything exciting in the world of entrepreneurship, and just a really great mentor and innovator who I really, really respect. Kurt, welcome to Hack My Business.
Oh, my pleasure. And what a wonderful intro. I'm blushing.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I really love about the bio that you have on LinkedIn is that you also label yourself as the collector of amazing friends, which I really appreciate because I feel like I try to do the same thing. I'm really a people person, Kurt, but I love that we share that passion as well.
You know, life's better together.
Life is definitely better together. Well, cool, man. So glad to have you on the show. I definitely want you to begin by sharing your own entrepreneurial background and your journey, because I think it's just so fascinating. So if you wouldn't mind just giving us the roadmap of how you arrived to where you are today, would be amazing.
Yeah. And thanks again for having me too. I'm honored to be here. And you're a great guy. And I always learn a lot from you too. And I appreciate how, you know, if I have issues and or challenges, you're always there for me and so many other people. Yeah. So I think like pressing rewind, thinking about that question, my grandparents were entrepreneurs and so are my parents. So I think that's a lot of it is like just saw always folks just kind of making their way. And I was in the real estate business out of college. And that was amazing. I was a real estate broker until the great financial crisis happened and I got completely wiped out. Wow. I had this incredible mentor named Duke Stump, who is a just great human, great business person as well. He was a former marketing executive at Nike and former head of marketing over at Lululemon. He gave me this advice. He's like, imagine the day, like what would Curdy D's perfect day look like? And, you know, I was reimagining what I wanted to do. And I said, hey, I want to do something that's in tech. I want to be, you know, working in a social enterprise to try to help the greater good. I want to be flying to conferences, getting paid to learn, getting paid to travel, getting paid to meet people. And yeah, and that was the imagine the day exercise. And within 3 months of that, that was in 2009, I met my technical co-founder for City Sourced. Within 12 months, we were on the main stage at TechCrunch Disrupt in San Francisco and had a complete Mike Judge, Silicon Valley kind of TV show experience where we made finals and, you know, we all got to meet all the VCs and all that sort of thing. And yeah, that was sort of like what I was first known for in tech was that little business City Sourced. What we did was kind of novel is we pioneered mobile 3-on-1 where you can take photos of graffiti and potholes and overgrown vegetation and it would geotag the photo and send it into the city and the city would come in and fix it.
That's amazing. Just to jump in, you know, that is an amazing service. I did not know that. So amazing, man.
And Eric Garcetti was one of our first customers, which is kind of a cool story around community. We can get into that later. But yeah, was involved in that business for 3 years and helped kind of get it from 0 to 1 and scale it up. We had a lot of attention and ended up taking some growth capital from a billionaire, amazing entrepreneur named Jack Dangermond, the CEO and founder at Esri, and made friends with those guys and ended up after 3 years at City Source going and Jack recruited me to build out the emerging business group at Esri, which was helping helping young companies go to market with their enterprise mapping system, ArcGIS. And I did that for almost 6 years and helped over 300 companies go to market. And that was from 2012 to 2017, effectively. And then 2018, I was at Lime, the scooter company, and on the BD team there. And that was an amazing ride. It's kind of watched the company go from essentially zero to $100 million in revenue in 15 months. And then worked at an incubator called Coplex. And then I've been at Hunt Club, where I am now, for about 2.5 years now at the time of this recording. And my role as general manager is helping high growth companies with their executive and downstream talent recruiting. So we work mostly like with companies that many of us have heard of, from Calm or Peloton, and working to help them recruit executives like sales leaders or sales reps, and across all functions. So marketing, product, and so on. And we work mostly through the investor community to get referrals. So we mostly work through like Sequoia and Andreessen and awesome companies locally like Crosscut Ventures and so on. And they refer us their founders. So my career is interesting because right now I'm sort of sitting in the middle of the market, and I just sort of get to like surf the wave of the emerging future. And I've been through that kind of arc of my career in tech since 08. I've sort of scaled through like a startup, super high growth unicorn to enterprise. Yeah. So in a variety of roles too. So I have kind of an interesting point of view from where I sit currently.
Definitely a fascinating and interesting career path. There's so much to unpack, you know, relative to your experience, and just the brands that you've been associated with are just amazing. But I thought, you know, it'd be great to just look first at the CitySource experience, because, you know, obviously a lot of our audience are, you know, they might be first time entrepreneurs, right? Or, you know, maybe they have a small but mighty team. And I think for us, and I include myself in there, you know, this idea of acquisition, of being really successful with that first enterprise. What do you think was your success factors with that business? Because, you know, it sounds like you're essentially new to the entrepreneurship world, although you had, you know, background in real estate, which is a form of entrepreneurship in many ways. But what do you think were some of the success factors with that first enterprise you had?
Yeah. So out of the Imagine the Day exercise, I later learned that there are sort of three keys to the universe conspiring on your behalf. I learned this from a life coach, Michael Nitti, that my wife and I work with. And I have a podcast, The Curdy D Show, and he was on episode 6. So if this is interesting, you can go and unpack that. But to answer your question, kind of with a little context, Michael was hired by Tony Robbins to set up Tony's coaching practice. Then was Tony's VP of operations for 10 years and essentially shared this little bit that I'm about to share with you that he learned from Tony himself. And this sort of recipe for success is threefold. And the first thing is having clarity of objective or clarity of intention. So you're really concentrated and focused on the objective or the intention. And that's what the Imagine the Day exercise did for me. It helped me to get really concentrated and clear. I had those requirements. Second ingredient is enthusiasm or conviction around your intention. And I was so excited about CitySource, you know, and the excitement fed on itself. And I was like, pinch me. I can't believe this is happening, you know. And then thirdly, that the intention or the mission or the objective, however you want to think about it, serves the greater good, that it's not self-serving. And when you have those three things in alignment, that's where the magic happens. And that was sort of the secret for me. And I think if anybody looks at their career, their life, if they look back at any time that they had a success, those three things were most likely present. And serving the greater good, it doesn't have to be saving the world. It could just be like serving a niche market like we were trying to do with CitySource. You know, it doesn't have to be some big thing. It can just be like trying to help people, help customers, you know, have a happier life or be more successful, whatever problems they're trying to solve.
I love it. I love one thing I always remember when we first got connected, and also just the friends that we have in the LA venture space, is that I was actually really surprised to see that that cause related, that mission focus was really a key part of it. I mean, you guys are all really successful in your work, but you're definitely being driven by larger goals, right? To do good for society. I am curious, you know, Imagine the Day. What exactly is that? What is that exercise that you have to do?
Yeah, I think the Imagine the Day exercise is sort of an idea or a label. And if you were to do a design exercise, which is in the world that I live in tech, you know, you have a lot of times like Google pioneered some of this stuff or like design thinking. It's essentially trying to create the conditions for the magic. The same mentor that Duke that gave me the exercise also has this saying that you can't create the magic, but you can create the conditions for the magic. The Imagine the Day is like, what are those conditions? And so when I gave gave my example of CitySource, like CitySource was sort of the result of the exercise. But what I did is I just spent some time. I remember it was September of 08 and like the market was falling apart and I just was like WTF. And I spent some time in my backyard. It was a beautiful night, full moon. It was, you know, warm outside. And I just sat with my journal and I thought about like, if I were to imagine Kurt ED's perfect day, and it's a metaphorical day, it's a week, it's a month, it's a year, it's a career. And essentially just wrote down, all right, I want to be like, all right, I'm tired of dealing with the retail consumer. I want a professional buyer. You know, I want to be, you know, doing something in tech. You know, I want to be on an airplane once a month. And so there we go. And I had my requirements and like, sure enough, back to the, you know, Michael Nitty, Tony Robbins insight, like that helped concentrate my mind. I think as humans, our minds are really powerful. And if we could tune them to concentrate and we get excited about that, that's probably some kind of melding of the mind and the emotions that really just starts to tune in.
I love it. You know, like I said, how you paint pictures and your ability to cast that vision, I think it's just so profound. I'm curious, you know, later on in life, you know, or through your journey, you do move from, you know, starting up these firms and now into essentially advising or being part of the management teams. What was that like for you? And how do you determine how do you best add value to each of these firms that you work with, whether it's Lime or Hunt Club? Like, how do you determine what you can bring to the table there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for my career, there's this idea of purposive drift. So like drifting with a purpose. And that's with my show, the Kurt ED Show. That's what I'm trying to unpack, is that it's like humanizing success. And I'm just trying to head kind of in a general direction and try to like be involved in like interesting projects while working with interesting people. And so it's kind of like one thing has led to another. It hasn't been like some grand plan where I sort of like, all right, by the age of 50, I'm going to be retired and like, you know, work backwards. And this is what I have to do. It's sort of very much just trusting that everything's going to work out and that like, what's sort of the next bit. And, you know, when I left Esri, I was there almost 6 years, and that was one of the hardest things I ever did because I love those guys so much. I'm still very, very connected to them. I have so much respect, but I was at a point where I was reporting, like my boss was reporting directly to the CEO. You know, it's a big organization, 5,000 in the US. Like there really wasn't much higher for me to go. And I wasn't really learning a ton anymore, but I was kind of fat and happy and I was complacent.
That could be really tough, yeah, to break out.
My girlfriend at the time, Holden, I got to give her credit. Like, she's just like, bro, like, I think it's time for you to go to the next thing. And I was like, really? I'm having so much fun here and it's so easy. And she's like, that's the problem.
You know? Got too easy. So, yeah.
It was like, I wasn't learning anything new. So, you know, and I, knock on wood, I left on really good terms. Like the CEO even called me when I put in my resignation and tried to offer me all this other stuff. And I'm so grateful and we're still friends. There's always a way back. If I wanted to go work for those guys again, I could do that. And that's what I always try to do. And I never leave out the back door. I always be able to lead from the front door so that if you ever wanted to go back, you'd be welcome, right? When I left, I didn't know what I was going to do. I basically went up to San Francisco. I was living in the Los Angeles area, sold my house and went in and moved in with my girlfriend and ended up getting a gig at Lime through a connection. And that was great. And then that led to the next thing. And just getting to be a really long answer to your question, but like, it's just trusting that, you know, the next thing is going to take care of itself and just sort of paying attention and feeling what the next thing is. Like for Hunt Club, like I wasn't looking for a gig. Mm-hmm. They hit me up and they recruited me. And that's part of what's novel about Hunt Club's mechanism. They built this warm referral network. The network got activated on my behalf and here I am. So the universe just kind of pulled me to the next thing.
I think it's just really important because everybody has such a different journey, right? It's all winding and, you know, the different paths you take. And a lot of it's just, you know, what experiences do you gain? I did want to, you know, dive a little bit further into the concept of community. You know, like I said, you know, you and I feel really fortunate that you and I were able to connect through our mutual friend, Vince Thompson, who has been on Hack My Business, great guy, you know, big time revenue consultant, just amazing person and natural connector. But he really was the first to bring me into the LA venture scene. This is, you know, a number of years back. And I was really like the government guy entering this world where of, you know, fast growth and venture and just innovative, amazing companies. But I know for many of our entrepreneurs, they may be wondering or thinking about how do they plug in, right? Whether it's the venture scene, maybe it's a, you know, different community they might be at in, say, in Kansas or Arkansas. But how would you advise them? And I know you're a very proactive guy, but, you know, what would you recommend for those who want to connect with the community, may not know the exact right steps? You know, how did you do it? What would you advise them?
Yeah. As humans, like, we're all social creatures. I think we want to be connected to each other. I think that's the first principle of the idea. I think the other idea is we all have gifts. We're all unique. We all have something that we're like really special and unique around. For me, like in high school, I always threw the parties and I like to bring people together. And in LA, I've thrown a ton of events over the years and sort of been one of the community leaders, kind of being the straw that stirs the drink, right? So for me, it was doing events. And I just started doing these, like, I was really inspired by Ben Franklin. He did these back in the day. He started an organization called Junto, J-U-N-T-O, in Philadelphia. And they would meet a group of peers every Friday. And they had a, you know, they started the first hospitals and libraries. And I was really inspired by that. And so I did a thing in LA called Meeting of the Minds that ran for a few years, MOTM, M-O-T-M. And then I started doing this thing called Digital Family Reunion, where we'd get sort of all the community leaders together once a year to celebrate one another at the holidays. And it was sort of like the annual holiday party, almost like homeroom for the community. That's sort of like all the in real life stuff. But like then you have the digital world, and Twitter was just been amazing for me. There's all these different communities in Twitter. I love to invest, and there's like a FinTwit, F-I-N-T-W-I-T, hashtag FinTwit community. There's so many of these little niche communities on Twitter that you can get connected to. Reddit as well. The classic one is the Wall Street Bets community. And then, yeah, you know, you could start meeting some of these people online. So like when I started City Sourced, I was like, well, who could really help me out here? And I was like, oh, Eric Garcetti, he's connected. He was at the time, he was president of the LA City Council. So I started following him. I sent him a Facebook direct message. I was like, hey, Eric, you don't know me, but this is what I'm trying to do with this mobile 3-1-1. And, you know, and he connected me with this gal named Agnes at the 3-1-1. And she ended up helping us think through our original data model. And we got it done. We launched. We made a big fuss in TechCrunch, just with that story I told you. And then I saw he had posted that he was going to do a ribbon cutting for a new library in Los Angeles at Silver Lake. And this is like in late 2009. And so he said what time he was going to be there. And so I just went down there with my phone and I just found the right moment to go and say hi and connect the dots. Like, hey, I'm the guy that, you know, on Facebook, and here's the app, and this is what we're trying to do. And, you know, maybe we can call it Garcetti 311. He liked that idea. So he's like, hey, come over to the office next week. And we made friends and we ended up, you know, launching that in LA. And I think that's a really good example of like when you, back to like the imagine the day and back to like getting like concentrated about what you do. And then when you are enthusiastic about it, it's that enthusiasm that gets people excited and cuts through the noise. Enthusiasm is and conviction is a wonderful signal. And so I think to your question about building community or finding community, find people that give you energy or that you feel like, you know what, when I hang out with that person, like they inspire me or I get more wind in my sails, and pay attention to that signal and go do more of that. And then you pull a thread and like a whole new world will open up.
I think you and I are very much alike in that way, as far as like we draw energy from others who are enthusiastic and share purpose. But I love that when you're unafraid to reach out and form those connections, whether it was in person or virtual, right? And I love that your first thought is, I need to get in front of the president of the City of LA Council, who is now the mayor of the City of LA, for those who may not know, Eric Garcetti.
Yeah, we ended up doing a bunch of other stuff with him too. So it was a really fruitful partnership. So for introverts, so I'm extroverted. I get energy from being around people. I think that's the definition. For introverts, you know, like my brother is a little bit more introverted, and he's been doing some incredible community building in Eugene, Oregon, where he lives. And he's been having a lot of fun experimenting. He's really good with art, and he's been having a lot of fun with social media. And I think back to like, you know, what it is that's your unique genius and unique skill. I think for introverts, that can find spaces where they can practice and exhibit their craft. Those kind of spaces that are safe spaces will open up.
How do you think, you know, the formal kind of systems of community building, incubators, accelerators, I don't know if you've been part of those leadership teams or advised them. What do you think of those current structures for entrepreneurs, especially, you know, first-time entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I mean, I think like if you can get into Y Combinator, like, that's pretty incredible. Typically, I mean, that's sort of the holy grail out of San Francisco, Y Combinator. Typically, you have to have a technical co-founder. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff all over the place. You know, like Techstars in Los Angeles is really good. I've been a mentor for them. Those guys are really open. They run a great program. They've had a lot of success with it. Then there's a lot of niche stuff. So there's this gal in Los Angeles area working with an organization called Alliance. It's AllianceSoCal.org. That's the URL, AllianceSoCal.org. And her name is Rachel Espiritu, R-A-Y-C-H-E-L, Espiritu, E-S-P-I-R-I-T-U. And they have an incredible program, incredible nonprofit helping, you know, folks that, you know, might be underrepresented and supporting diversity founders to go to market with startups. And they have lots of resources. So, you know, across the board, like in the seat that I sit in, I'm seeing a lot of DE&I and diversity inclusion efforts across the landscape for early stage funds that are just focused around, for example, like, you know, having a mandate to back, you know, early stage Black founders and so on and so forth. And there's so many of these that are popping up and it's incredible.
Yeah, same. We actually had Renee King, who leads Fund Black Founders, on the show. We also had Arlen Hamilton as well, who I know you know. But yeah, I mean, I think that's been one of the really exciting things to see over the past few years, the rise of those DEI associations, organizations that are really trying to nurture entrepreneurs. I think there's a really interesting thing happening right now. I really want to also kind of dig into, I mean, there's so many things to talk to you about, man. I know we're going to...
One other thought too.
Yeah, go for it.
And this is your world, and you probably talk about this all the time, but you know, the federal government has a mandate to spend 23% of their budget for the SMB, small, medium-sized business. And there's a big weighting to winning these deals for having a minority founder, whether it's a female founder or a racial minority. And, you know, and I think that mandate of 23% is probably going to go up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. I'm actually glad you bring that in because I think it's a great to kind of seg into some other work that you do. So yeah, I mean, we talk about small business issues, the federal programs, but yeah, procurement, this idea of procurement, state contracting, federal contracting. And yeah, there's the holy grail for these federal and state agencies to connect with a really great minority business, disadvantaged business audience. However, you know, one of the biggest challenges there is just, you know, the number of businesses that get certified or even just the number of entrepreneurs in a certain space. Like for example, firms, small firms with the ability to do, say, like electric vehicle charging or, you know, to do certain engineering projects. A lot of that really, in order to really kind of build that kind of entrepreneurship base, you actually had to start with workforce development. You know, you had to excite people about certain career paths, certain industry elements. And I know that's some of the work that you're doing right now is connecting talent, you know, or building talent. I did want to spend some time talking about that because in my consulting world, we spend a lot of time with our clients who are state agencies, et cetera, economic development organizations and figuring out how do you do that? You know, how do you really grow talent? How do you connect talent into amazing firms so that those individuals get the experience, the skills they need, you know, whether to rise within that company or to start firms down the road? But how do you approach that type of work? You know, how do you design those kind of talent pipelines? I think that'd be really fascinating to talk about.
Yeah. Well, there's a great book called Recruit Rockstars by Jeff Hyman. I recommend anybody interested in this topic. This is a 10-step playbook to find the winners and ignite your business. Sort of like a really easy to read, but practical thing on how to do it. And we follow some of these steps in the book. I mean, at the end of the day, there's four ways to create like leverage. Leverage is sort of this idea that's really important in business. You know, you have sort of nonlinear impact. So you put in a dollar, you get two out, right? That's leverage. There's four ways. One is labor. Second is capital. Third is code and programming. And the fourth is content and building audiences. Like both of us have podcasts and it's a really high leverage thing. I get these emails from people for stuff that I've done months and months ago. Then they just got it. And that's a great way to sort of like get out to market. Yeah, I think this all gets back to storytelling, right? Like what's the story that you're telling yourself that you want to do with your life? And then how are you projecting that into the market, into the world? And, you know, and not everybody's designed to be a leader and not everybody's designed to be a follower. So we all need each other. And so there's that. That's sort of the philosophical. Where we're at in the world right now is unusual time. It's challenging for many ways. And in the labor market, it's been very, very tight. And I think it's going to stay that way for better and for worse. And demographics is a big part of that. So here we are, it's 2022. We have a lot of boomers that are retiring. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, you know, Gen X folks that have done well and they're retiring. And so they are no longer working, but more so is they're still, they have money enough to retire. So they're still consuming products and services. So the demand is staying consistent by and large, but the supply is reducing.
Yeah, definitely evolving, right? And also the priorities now of people is really changing very quickly.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the demographic pyramid, on the younger side, so when my dad was my age, I was 23 years old and I still don't have kids. So 100 years ago, we lived in farms and rural areas and we had kids because it was cheap labor. Fast forward to now, we've urbanized and having kids is very expensive. It's a luxury. So we're having less kids. So there's less supply coming onto the market for these more junior roles. So on both sides of the pyramid, on the boomers and Gen X that are retiring, and you have like, you know, less younger folks coming into the market. And I think this pattern is going to stay persistent or sticky for probably, you know, a long time. So it's going to be more competitive for these roles.
Yeah. And I think to your earlier point, as far as how are they casting their image, right? These firms. And I think what they're also discovering is that the ability of, especially the younger generations, to smell inauthenticity, you know, it was fascinating to watch some of the DEI initiatives, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives roll out during the pandemic, where some folks just kind of fell flat on their face because you could tell they weren't really serious about it, right? And they were casting a false image. So I think this is also just a really key insight, kind of to your earlier point, like project what you want to build, right? Be sincere in that approach, and then you will draw the folks that are interested in supporting your mission, but you have to be authentic in that work. Otherwise, you're really going to struggle. Speaking on just the extraordinary changes from pandemic, we have seen an incredible rise of entrepreneurship. This really strong interest in there, especially first timers, you know, could be younger or even retirees or people who just left their positions. What excites you the most? I know you're always keeping an eye on the small business or startup scene. What excites you the most? What do you see as far as trends that really kind of intrigue you?
Yeah, I think hands down, how much easier it is to start a tech company. Like when we were doing it in 2009, like this was before Amazon AWS and Azure. And I remember we got Microsoft to write us a check to help us for server costs. And we were like an early, you know, Microsoft Azure cloud developer. And that was challenging. And you had to have like, you know, my technical partner was really, really talented and he could do it all. He could, you know, design it. He could write the code. He could get it online. But those people are really hard to find. I got lucky. Fast forward to now, a lot of the, you know, you have all these like, you know, no code applications and all this infrastructure and it's all there.
Yeah.
You know,
also the community, right? I mean, kind of to your earlier point, I remember back in the day, you know, the challenge, I mean, we even did some work with the Kauffman Foundation around this, where we identified the biggest barrier to innovation in the county of LA was distance, geography. You know, you had folks that weren't able to connect, who lived in, say, San Gabriel Valley, wouldn't go to Santa Monica, vice versa. But now you have social media tools, digital tools where that divide, Zoom, right? Zoom technology just instantly connect you to people. And that is, I think, unprecedented, the ability to force those connections, right?
Yeah. And then be able to have a hybrid or even a like remote first work thing. Like my wife and I, we work from home. We love it. We're more productive. There's sort of good and bad with working from home too. But there's some, you know, challenges, feel a little disconnected sometimes, but our productivity is insane.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, so you have essentially a global talent pool now.
Right.
I've had really great success working with overseas talent too. Like I have a team that helps me with my podcast, they're overseas. And I think the other thought is so many resources out there, like Hunt Club, like we're an incredible shop to help find executive and non-executive talent for recruiting. But there's a lot, like there's one folks that I'm aware of in the market that I referred my wife's firm to called Brain Trust. And it's usebraintrust.com, and they're a decentralized network for technical talent. So like engineers, programmers, product managers, product designers.
Wow.
And it's a Web3 system. It's really affordable. And they're changing the game in sort of like that technical talent market and making it even easier and cheaper and faster to like find somebody to work with you with less risk because it's on a short-term contract and you have all this infrastructure like that's all set up, ready to go, plug and play. So like if you have a good idea, you can go and test things pretty cheaply and quickly. And then there's all that like lean startup stuff. There's that book, The Lean Startup Canvas, an essential book. It has a whole kind of like color by numbers way to like kind of think through the business model and kind of think through how to go to market and do your experiments. So, you know, a lot of the go to market stuff has all been demystified. The infrastructure is all there. So really exciting time. The flip side of that is like, there's so much out there.
So much,
it all sort of becomes like so much signal. It becomes noise and like how to like tune into the right channel. So hopefully this is resonating with some folks here.
Oh, absolutely. I think it absolutely is. I appreciate your recommendations and thoughts. But yeah, the unprecedented access to resources and information to give you an opportunity to talk about the Curdy D Show, which I love that name. Is that some of the topics that you dive into? Do you help people kind of understand those resources and how to access them? Is that what the show is all about?
We get into that sometimes. Yeah. So my nickname is Curdy D. So Curt Derdix. And people started calling me Curdy D. And that became like my Twitter handle at K-U-R-T-Y, letter D. Yeah, I started doing the show through the pandemic. It's sort of like, for me, I wanted to celebrate all those incredible people that I've met, like you, and you're coming on the show later this month, and I can't wait to have you. And it's this idea of humanizing success and kind of gets into that idea of purposive drift. And it's kind of this idea that it's just all hard. Like, life is just hard. You know, it's hard to get wealthy. It's hard to be poor. It's hard to get healthy or like stay in shape, but it's hard to be sick. It's all hard. So we just get to choose wisely. And it's sort of this idea that if you could do the work now, the hard road becomes easy and the easy road becomes hard. Right. So I'm trying to inspire folks. It's sort of this middle third segment. Like, there's a third of folks that are just going to be self-directed and self-motivated, and they're just going to crush it regardless. There's the other third that, like, no matter how many times you bring the horse to the water, they just can't get it together.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But then there's that third that if they just had a little bit of coaching, a little inspiration, a little bit of help, they can make maybe like, you know, make it real go. And that's really what I'm trying to do, is inspire folks that might be in that kind of middle section to like sort of humanizing success. And people get really real on the show. First episode was with my dad, who I helped get sober when I was in my early 20s. Wow. He had a really bad drug and alcohol addiction. And, you know, 20 years later, he's a real model in our community of like somebody that's gotten sober, and he mentors a lot of people and he helps a lot of people. And so that was me sort of going first and kind of airing something that I used to be really embarrassed about. Mm-hmm. And there's other things in my life that I've had to overcome. And that's sort of what it is, celebrating like the thing that you overcame that was hard. And so that's sort of the idea of the show, human. Amazing success.
Yeah. I love it, man. You're such a well of wisdom, man. It just really, really always appreciate your insights. You know, I know we covered a lot of different things, you know, today on this show. What is the one thing, you know, if somebody had to take away one thing from our conversation, what would you want them to take away?
Oh, I love that question. I think just that everybody listening to this to just, you know, take a breath and just celebrate how unique you are, you know, and how it's a miracle that statistically that any of us made it to be alive. The chances of all those things going right from all history and blah, 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 and to be able to like be alive is like a miracle in and of itself. And it's like, what do we get to do with it next? So, and if I could be helpful to anybody, I'm easy to get a hold of. I'm at Curdy D on all the channels, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm at Curt Derdix, and I have a little newsletter. People can go and sign up to curtyd.com. Yeah, I'm here to help.
Awesome, man. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You're the straw that stirs the drink. I don't think I'll ever forget that phrase. But you've been a touch point, a mentor to me. And yeah, I appreciate it even during the pandemic that we had a chance to reconnect and share some wisdom with each other. But yeah, just really big thank you for coming on the show, sharing your thoughts, your inspiration. You're doing some amazing work. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, like recognizes like, Jesse.
There you go. There you go. Thanks, man. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much.
If you need help and want to be a part of our community and find resources to grow your business, join us at our website at smallbusinessfront.com. We'd love to see you there. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time on Hack My Business.